Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single week and jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC. And we're coming off of an excellent weekend of TKO events being put on. WWE Backlash and UFC 315 did not disappoint. They're both very entertaining. And despite not being able to watch either of them live, I was able to go back, look through them, see what happened, check on the results, and I am very happy to be going through and recapping both of them on today's episode. Talking about how we did on predictions. You know, for Backlash, 4-1, pretty simple, pretty easy predictions there. For UFC, though, that's the tricky one. 7-5, and we really shouldn't have gone 7-5. I'm going to be honest, we should not have gone 7-5, but that's just something we're going to talk about on today's episode as well. I have two new UFC fights to discuss with. Well, that'll be what we'll be kicking off the episode with. But guys, what do you know? I'm a college graduate now. I no longer am in college. Well, I do still have one more college class over the summer, but I am officially, in a way, graduated. Had the whole ceremony, had an amazing weekend, seeing the friends, seeing my grandparent, my grandpa, my girlfriend, my parents. It was a really nice weekend, and you know, it's bittersweet, but you know, I haven't really been sad. I've just been very aware that times are changing, and this was the best times of my life. And you know, maybe it might be the best times of my life, but I really like to think that the future is always going to be better than the past. So we're not going to dwell on anything that has happened before. We're here to focus on what is to come, and actually what happened in a way. So I guess we are focusing on what's to come. But let's get right into everything. Let's end the little introduction. And you know, we haven't had too many new UFC fights announced, but we have had two over the last 3 days, which I did want to discuss. The first one, middleweight division. Actually, they're both in the middleweight division now that I think about it. The number, oh, he's not even ranked anymore. Jack Hermanson will be taking on Gregory Rodriguez coming up this summer. And Jack Hermanson at one point was in the rankings, and just inactivity has just absolutely killed this guy. You know, where was Jack Hermanson's career at? I'm actually genuinely trying to remember because I cannot remember where Jack Hermanson was at. I wonder if I can find, you know, where the UFC lists all of their middleweight division fighters. But Jack Hermanson, last time he fought, February 2024, humbled Joe Pfeiffer. You know, humbled Joe Pfeiffer, basically went out and fraud checked him, as what people call it, and then disappeared, you know, didn't have any more fights booked, didn't do anything, and now he's back against Gregory Rodriguez. Gregory Rodriguez obviously had the biggest fight of his career against Jared Cannonier earlier this year, and unfortunately lost. That was very unfortunate for him, but he put on a fight of the night, dropped Jared Cannonier, for goodness sakes, and when that fight takes place, I'm probably going to ride with Gregory Rodriguez, but Gregory Rodriguez has just historically only done well against non-ranked talent. That's just always how it's gone. And, you know, as of right now, Gregory Rodriguez's ceiling appears to be Jared Cannonier, which is a good sign because Jack Hermanson has lost to Jared Cannonier. So that should be an interesting one. I just found it very fascinating. It was just random. Came across the feed, and I was like, oh, new UFC fight. Interesting. The other one, though, this is big. UFC Abu Dhabi going down, I want to say end of July, maybe August. You got the number 5 and the number 13th ranked middleweights, Robert Whittaker and Rainer Date Ritter. I was hoping they'd do Rainer Date Ritter, Sean Strickland, Robert Whittaker versus Cal Barallo, but you know what? I'm not going to complain. Whittaker, Rayner, going to be a fantastic matchup. Rayner Rivera is coming to the UFC and just absolutely taking over. Beats Gerald Meerschaert, beats Kevin Holland, beats Bo Nickel, and now he's getting Robert Whittaker. And as for Robert Whittaker, I mean, it was tough. It's been tough going. You know, Hamza Chimaev goes out, mauls him. Obviously, DDP had beaten him. Now, mind you, Whittaker has wins over, what's his face? Who did Robert Whittaker beat in that time span? I'm trying to actually think. He beat Marvin Vettori. No, he's beaten him before. He's beaten Paulo Costa, Whittaker. Oh, he beat Ikram Makhachev. That's who it was. So just a good bounce back fight for Robert Whittaker. And at this stage of both guys' careers, this is just be kind of telling as to where is one going to go up and where is the other going to go down. So I am very curious to see what happens in that matchup. Whittaker is probably going to want to keep it on the feet. Rainer's going to want to bring it to the ground. And this will just kind of tell if Rainer Date Ritter's ceiling could go past Robert Whittaker. And if Rainer beats Whittaker, he's probably getting the next title shot. That's legit how this is going to work. So a lot of interesting things are going to take place with that matchup. But I'm happy the middleweight division is moving forward. We still have no new news on DDP, Imavov, Strickland, Chimaev, Adesanya, Barallo. But, you know, with news of these two matchups, we're going in the right direction. I think actually, Anthony Hernandez, I think, is a matchup with Roman Dolidze. being rumored to be a fight night taking place somewhere coming up. And you got Vittori and Allen taking place. We just need Paul Costa to fight someone. We should have had Paul Costa versus Bo Nickel. That's the fight we should have had. But nonetheless, we'll move past that because I really want to dive into Backlash before we talk about UFC 315. So, of course, WWE Backlash. The, what is it, fourth Peely? Fourth Peely we've had of the year so far. I mean, it was entertaining. It was good, though. There's nothing to complain about for this card. This is just a run-of-the-mill, great WWE PLE, and it was very interesting. The storylines they're building, storylines they have going on, and all the matches, how they all played out. So, of course, kick things off. They went to start with a fatal four-way for the WWE United States Championship. Jacob Fatu, LA Knight, Damian Priest, Andrew McIntyre, and them boys, you know, I can see why they had them open the show because they did a fantastic job. They gave them 17 minutes and 55 seconds to work, and they maximized it to the core. LA Knight, can't lie, even though he took the pin, he looked good here. LA Knight looked really good. You know, LA Knight is kind of falling into this mid-card background role, I hate to say it, obviously, since losing the belt to Jacob Fatu. But he was really great in this matchup. Jacob Fatu, amazing as always. He, of course, retained. Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre having some great moments throughout, including this Damian Priest, I don't even know what his finish was called, but a chokeslam off of this giant structure through a bunch of tables. It was amazing. And you also had the debut, right when you thought Jacob Fatu was going to maybe lose to LA Knight, they actually teased that. I was kind of going like, all right, are they really going to swerve us here? But no, you have the debut of Jeff Cobb, and Jeff Cobb is another new member of the Bloodline. Another new member of the Bloodline. He was really big in New Japan Pro Wrestling. I think he was in maybe TNA or something. But hey, he's super legit. Solo Sikoa basically saves Fatu. Then Jeff Cobb makes his debut. And Jeff Cobb kind of gives off Jacob Fatu vibes. And this is where you're going to start to see the split of Jacob Fatu moving away from the Bloodline. I mean, Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, do they even show up anymore? Like, what do those guys even do? Are they both injured or something? I'm very curious to see if they appear on WWE television soon. But Jacob Fatu, absolutely stunned in this one. He retains the United States Championship, and they're ultimately building to the inevitable Jacob Fatu Solo Sikoa matchup right there. I think that'll happen sometime later this year, and I actually do, I can even see SummerSlam it taking place, and I think it should be for the United States Championship, and I do think you should have Jacob Fatu win. However, if you do want to give Solo Sikoa a championship, this could be an opportunity to do it. But I don't know, this was a great way to open the card, and all these guys came out looking phenomenal. I won't lie, Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre looked better in this than they did in their singles match at WrestleMania. I just don't know how much longer you could drag out this feud. It's starting to turn into Rhea Ripley and Liv Morgan, where they just repetitively have them face each other. We might need to move away from that. After that, Lyra Valkyrie and Becky Lynch, and I knew they were going to let this match succeed, but 18 minutes, 45 seconds, wow, they really gave both these women so many opportunities. Lyra Valkyrie, in the end, upsetting Becky Lynch, absolutely wild. So many good spots here, so many close pins, and you know, when you get an 18-minute, 45-second match, you're going to have so many close falls, it gets to a point where you're like, holy cow, what's it going to take? And eventually what took was a Lyra Valkyrie surprise roll-up. And, you know, Becky Lynch was dominating her. It was looking like she was going to pull off the win. And then Lyra Valkyrie does her little package roll-up. And then Becky Lynch just snaps, goes absolutely crazy. You know, Lynch is just beating her down. You have all a bunch of people from backstage running out. It was madness. And let me just tell you, this feud is going to be very, very good. I think the next thing is Money in the Bank. And I don't know if you have them fight there. I think this could honestly be a main event of Monday Night Raw coming up. Make it a street fight. Make it a submission match. Do something with Becky Lynch and Lyra Valkyrie. Because right now, this was stage two of their feud, I think. And when we move into stage three, it's going to get really good. But I'm happy they gave them a bunch of time. Entertaining match. It did disappoint. And like I said, I said this is going to be a must-see match. And it was a must-see match. Amazing work to Lyra Valkyrie and Becky Lynch. And Lyra Valkyrie, how about that? Went from being somewhat unknown to right now, she's kind of a star in the making. And she just beat Becky Lynch for, I guess, the second time. I think she's 2-0 over. I saw that somewhere, interestingly enough. After that, the halfway point of the show, Dominic Mysterio and Penta for the Intercontinental Championship. Was thinking we maybe should have had a feud, but a stipulation for this, but we didn't need a stipulation. They gave him 9 minutes and 20 seconds, and it was action-packed from the get-go. And let me just say, Let me just say, Dominic Mysterio is quite literally Eddie Guerrero reincarnated because he is such a good heel and everyone cheers for him. It was amazing. Penta's entrance was so badass. I mean, that dude is just such a killer. He has came in and just taken the UFC, not the UFC, the WWE by storm. Actually, who knows? He could probably compete in the UFC for goodness sakes. But yeah, the moves they were hitting, Penta diving over the top rope, taking out JD McDonagh, Carlito kept getting involved. You had this crazy moment where Dominic Mysterio dove through the ropes and he caught Penta and he hit him with this DDT onto the outside of the ring, and it was a crazy moment. And then you get to the end and Finn Balor, you know, getting involved, but Finn Balor choosing not to really help. Finn Balor's just kind of there. He was more of a distraction, but he never actually physically hit Penta. And you are seeing the breaking point of Finn Balor. You know, Finn Balor, right after the finish comes, you actually have El Grande Americano, Chad Gable in quotation marks, getting involved, costing Penta. There's going to be a feud right there. Obviously, Dominic Mysterio then hits the little Eddie Guerrero crossbody, frog splash, pins him, gets out of the ring. They're all celebrating. And you can just see Finn Balor, you know, he's eyeing that belt, he's eyeing Dominic Mysterio, and those two are going to break up at some point, similar to Solo Sikoa, Jacob Fatu. That feud is going to hit. However, I'm going to be honest, I think you should have Finn Balor beat Dominic Mysterio for the Intercontinental Championship. I think that is the move to do. Whereas I think Fatu should beat Sikoa, I think Finn Balor should beat Dominic Mysterio. It makes so much sense, and they've been doing Finn Balor so dirty. Finn Balor has way too much talent to just be having matches here and there on Raw. Now, I can't lie, they do have him versus AJ Styles booked for Monday Night Raw coming up. That's going to be a fantastic, just dream wrestling match. But this one, Finn Balor, Dr. Cyril, that's being teased. Penta, always going to be a stud. And Penta is like kind of, I say, a better version of LA Knight when it comes to the mid-card picture, where as LA Knight has just won the United States Championship before, he's always going to be a formidable opposition. Penta always kind of leaves the opening to win the belt whenever you see him competing, but he is just such a great in-ring talent. That was a phenomenal match. Then what I thought would have been this halfway point of the show, but turned out to be the second to last, which I honestly thought worked for this, Gunther, Pat McAfee, and 14 minutes, exactly what you expected. Exactly what you expected from this match. Gunther dominating. Honestly, Pat McAfee hitting some great moves on him. And one thing I love is that Pat McAfee was hitting him with all of his typical finishers and stuff, and it just wasn't enough for Gunther. And Michael Cole kept getting involved, which was great. And then you have Michael Cole and Pat McAfee teaming together to try and pin Gunther, and still not working. And the finish was great. Gunther locking up the Texas rear naked choke. And just when you think Pat McAfee's going to get it, he reasserts position and submits him. And this is exactly what you should know. And honestly, instead of having Gunther just go out there and obliterate him, doing what they did here, I really liked. And Pat McAfee, you know, for not really having in-ring attire, for not really having the best stylistic approach, he looks great in the ring, and he's entertaining, and it really works for me. It works for a lot of other WWE fans. And Pat McAfee, I think, should have matches in the future. But this was such a great feud to have Gunther do post-WrestleMania to kind of rebuild him up as this absolute wrecking ball, this powerhouse, and it was just, it was what needed to be done. And after the match, Gunther gave a showing of respect to Pat McAfee, which really caught everyone off guard. And Gunther, he's a great heel. He's just one of those heels where, you know, Logan Paul's a run-of-the-mill heel nowadays where it's so easy to boo him. But Gunther, it's like, yeah, he's a heel, but he's just so freaking good in ring, so entertaining to watch. You can't help but cheer for him at some point. So I'll be curious to see what Gunther does. If I'm being honest, Jey Uso and Logan Paul are going to have a little feud for the World Heavyweight Championship. I can see maybe Gunther taking on Jey after that's over. I don't know if they want that feud to end. I don't know, but Gunther, he's still as big as he was before he had the lost the championship. And I think he's going to be successful moving forward for 2025. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, we moved into the final match of the evening. John Cena, Randy Orton for the Undisputed WWE Championship. This went 27 minutes and 50 seconds. The whole ordeal really went 40 minutes. And the entrance for Randy Orton, look, I'll tell you guys. I'll tell you, he had so much aura, and the crowd was into it. It had a big match feel, and it was so fun to watch. I mean, I was watching it back, like, should I just skip to the in-ring? I'm like, no, I'll watch the entrances, and the entrances might have been better than the actual contest. Randy Orton's was so legendary when he was getting his name, when they were reading off, like, the John Cena from Mosinberry, Massachusetts. He's the reigning champion. For that, it was amazing for him, and for Randy Orton, the crowd was going crazy she went from St. Louis, Missouri. Oh, you could feel the place absolutely bumping. St. Louis, great crowd. they need to go back to St. Louis. Let me tell you, Enterprise Center in Missouri, I mean, they had 17,000 people there. It was doing an amazing, amazing job on me. As a viewer, great work to the crowd. And for John Cena, you know, John Cena's character as a heel, obviously, I think the biggest detriment, the only negative I'll say is the thing with The Rock went nowhere. I'll say him not changing his gear, but changing his entrance now to it's just black and goes John Cena. It's just something weird about that, how he still wears all the gear out yet doesn't hand it out. That's kind of interesting. I will say the John Cena heel turn, it feels forced. It feels like, you know, we're just getting it just because we've been wanting it for so long. But this match, the one thing I love about this is it built, and it put the Cody Rhodes match to shame. Let me just tell you, John Cena was doing the exact same things he was doing with Cody Rhodes, but doing it with Orton, and it worked. And mind you, if these two had matched up 16 years ago, they would have been way more faster in ring. They're obviously slowing down, but still, they delivered a fantastic match, hitting all their key moments. You had Randy Orton countering John Cena's AA into an RKO. You had him, you know when he does the little five-knuckle shuffle, and he hits you with the little shoulder thing? Him countering that into an RKO was so nostalgic, so legendary. It was so good, and you had them being put through tables. You had the ref getting knocked out multiple times, and he got knocked out so bad that John Cena was actually put through a table by Randy Orton. Oh, it was so good. Like, actual table, they pulled out. Such a great moment. Then you had the ref being completely knocked out again with the championship. You had a bunch of people from the back running down. Nick Aldis was there. He gets hit with an RKO. I'm sure they're going to build to Nick Aldis versus Randy Orton coming up, which, mind you, Orton should win that. Honestly, I think Randy Orton should win another championship or two. I think he's probably only going to win one more in the coming few years that he has left, but really, he deserves another championship run. Just when you think Randy Orton's going to do it, you know, John Cena, he's been beat, he's going down, and we've been teasing Orton, hitting the punt for so long. R-Truth runs down. And for many people that may be confused, R-Truth has had this gimmick the last few years since John Cena became a part-timer, and R-Truth is just a comedic character that he looks up to John Cena. He wants to be like John Cena when he grows up, and John Cena is his role model. It's a very comedic thing that WWE has him do. Now, R-Truth comes in, and he's pleading with Orton, don't do this, don't do this. So Orton hits him with an RKO, and he's like, why'd you make me do that? Why'd you make me do that? Low blow from John Cena. Hits him with the belt, hits him with the pin, and that's that. The one thing heel Cena does best is he just plays dirty. Pokes in the eyes, low blows. He's now had two championship victories, and they both come from him using the championship, which honestly, for some reason, actually feels like it hurts when it hits their head. They've been really selling that well, and just how big the Undisputed WWE Championship looks. It really feels like that puts your lights out cold, made of solid metal or steel, and John Cena retains. And he does what he needed to do, and he gets it done, and that was that. And the crowd honestly boos John Cena, but even with Randy Orton being the face and John Cena being the heel in St. Louis, the crowd couldn't help but cheer for John Cena. John Cena can say, I hate you all, you should go kill yourselves, and everyone will go, we love you so much, John Cena. We're a Christian crowd when John Cena's fighting. We're so forgiven. We just love him so much, and, you know, he celebrated that he says, cut the music. You are all welcome, because you have been graced for one last time with the greatest champion of all time, the GOAT. And I love this introduction. It's almost like a Bruce Buffer introducing John Jones, like the one and only. It's John Cena, the never before seen 17-time champion, the greatest of all time. I really like that angle. And then after they went off air, they had this moment where John Cena is kind of looking at R-Truth laying there. He's kind of looking at the belt. He's kind of looking at the crowd, and you're starting to see the cracks. Because obviously, guys, it's May. It's May. John Cena has 24 dates left for the year. 24 dates, 7 months. You're going to see John Cena 3 times every month. And of those 7 months, you're going to see him an extra one time in just 3 of those months. So there's not many more times you're going to see John Cena. And so they're going to slowly turn him face. I'm honestly feeling that John Cena is not going to win his final match. You know, it's going to be in Massachusetts, I think. And I think that with that match, it's either he's going to have lost the belt beforehand. Because right now, I don't know what feud they're going to do next for John Cena. Obviously, I think he's going to be main event in every event that they have. They obviously got Night of Champions coming up, SummerSlam, Money in the Bank. They got, I don't think it's Bash in Berlin. They got another Bash somewhere. They got all sorts of events coming throughout the year. And I just think John Cena is going to slowly turn face again. I just don't know if it's Cody Rhodes. You know, there's other dream feuds we have to do. That's why you got to tune into Raw and SmackDown over the next course of the month. Because on Raw and SmackDown, they're going to build up Saturday night's main event, which is honestly such a joke, because Jey Uso is not losing to Logan Paul on NBC, I can guarantee you that. But John Cena, It was a good feud with the next. I don't know. But this match was so nostalgic. It was so good. It was actually so entertaining. Backlash 2025, especially John Cena, Randy Orton. It gets an A+. It really gets an A+. And this year's been on fire for PLEs. You know, 2024 was super good, but 2025 has started with a bang. It's gotten us off guard. And mind you, the WrestleMania main event kind of left a damper on everyone. But let's not forget how good night one of WrestleMania 41 was. That, let's not forget how good that was. So with that, Backlash concluded, and it was just amazing. It was amazing. I'm happy to see where WWE goes from here. And when we speak next, I don't know if we're going to discuss Saturday night's main event next time we talk about WWE, but I'll definitely talk about Money in the Bank, whatever that comes around. But I'll tell you what I do want to talk about right now, and that is UFC 315. Because, you know, I don't think it was the best, but you know, pay-per-view of the year, but I'm going to be honest, I think it was better than 312 and 313. I think this was the third best, and I'm talking third in a good way of pay-per-views of the year. 7-5 on predictions, and yes, we do have a new UFC champion. I love to see it. We got a lot of fights to talk about. Let's get right on into it. Kicking off the evening, Beksat Akman and Brad Katsota. I mean, come on, guys. Come on, Beksat, getting us going in the bantamweight division with a, what was it, 1-minute, 4-second knockout. And this was simple as that. You know, they're just trading on the feet. You know, they're trying to feel each other out. Brad, literally, I don't know if he went to shoot or if he went for a low shot, but Beksat clips him with an uppercut. Down Brad goes, a couple follow-up punches. He was out cold. Beksat Akman, 10th career knockout, 11 of 12 wins now by finish. Yeah. Yeah, he's as legit as advertised. And I'm honestly ready to see him against other highly touted men's bantamweights. Good job, Beksat. Really good job. And I saw when he took on Umar that I knew there was potential in him. And I think the grappling may be Beksat's weakness. So we're going to have to see how he does in the striking department. But hey, can't ask for a better start than that. Beksat Akman, absolutely beautiful. Hitting Brad with the uppercut. And it's just, it was amazing. It was amazing. Great work to Beksat Akman. And I'm excited to see where he goes next from here. You know, I have two good names that come to mind. Daniel Marcos, who just lost his first professional fight to Montel Jackson. I think he could be a next potential name. I also really like Damon Blackshear as a next opponent. But honestly, there's so many men's bantamweights. You could match him up with, I mean, Adrian Yanez, Jonathan Martinez. There is so many people for Beksat Akman to fight. I'm excited for him in the UFC. I knew he was good, and at 27, he has so much potential. I could just see him in the rankings with someone's a ranking number next to his name. And honestly, Kyler Phillips at 12, Marcus McGee at 13. I would ship both of those fights for Beksat, but we'll remain cautious, and we'll keep him in the unranked opponent category for now. Now, as for his opponent, Brad Katsota. Brad, you know, you're 33, have been finished for the first time in your career. You're now, what is it, 1-3 since you returned, 2-3 since you returned the UFC, 1-3 in your last 4, 2-fight losing streak. It's just, you can keep him. You can have him fight an up-and-comer off the Dana White's Contender Series. You can have him fight anyone. But honestly, for me, I think my time with Brad Katsota in the UFC has come to an end. I mean, come on, come on. He's, what is he at? He's 16-5. He's hasn't had a finish in the UFC. He's yet to really put on a great performance. If I'm the UFC, I think I'm cutting Brad Katsota. I mean, maybe he finds success in the PFL. Maybe he goes over to one championship and finds success. But Brad Katsota, just going to be great in the Ultimate Fighter scene. But other than that, nothing much. Oh, he's the Ultimate Fighter GOAT. He's the greatest Ultimate Fighter of all time because technically he won it twice. You can say that. But yeah, good start tonight for Beksat. And we can get a round one knockout. Always gets the crowd going. After that, we had a very entertaining matchup, featherweight division, Daniel Santos, Ji Yong Lee. And, you know, I was bitter about it because Ji Yong lost. But honestly, Daniel Santos put on a great performance, 30-27s across the board. And look at that. Look at that. Daniel Santos now on a little 3-fight winning streak after dropping his debut, and he's back in the win category. I love to see it. Good job for Daniel Willycat doing it in the striking and the grappling. 90 significant strikes to 68, 119 total strikes to 107, 6 of 18 on takedowns for 6 minutes. I do want to say Ji Yong Lee's takedown defense was immaculate. Defending 12 takedowns? I mean, come on, that is not easy work. Not in the slightest. Defended 5 in round 1. Didn't give up a single one. I thought if any round that you could have given Ji Yong, it should have been round 1. But I can understand that was just competitive. It was like 50-50. Round 2, that's when you saw Daniel land 3 takedowns, was getting the ground and pound. Round 3, 3 of 8 more, getting more control time. And That was just that. But great work to Daniel, 30 years old, doing what he needs to do. Featherweight division, you got a good fighter here. You got a good fighter. You know, mixing in the grappling, I really like to see. His ground and pound and striking were pretty stellar. Now as for Jiyoung, two straight losses really sucks. Really sucks, man. I do think Jiyoung Lee is talented. I do think he's good, but he does, unfortunately, take a defeat here. So we'll just look forward to what he does in the future. But, hey, he made it competitive. We'll have to see. But, yeah, not too bad of a fight. It was pretty entertaining. And even though it wasn't fight of the night, after watching a round 1 minute knockout, then getting a 3-round fight, very entertaining 3-round fight. Now, what to do next with them? I mean, there's just tons of featherweights out there for both of them. I do think they'll bring Jiyoung Lee back. And as for Daniel, you know, they're going to give him maybe someone of a bit higher stature. I don't really know exactly whom. You know, you could have Daniel Santos take on. I don't really know who they want him to match up with. But there's guys out there. You know, someone like a Fernando Padilla, unranked guy. You also have, where some names are coming to mind, Kyle Nelson. You obviously have your Pat Sabatinis of the division. You have your, if everyone brings Jonathan Pierce back. There's unranked featherweights out there for these two to take on. And Daniel's going to be taking on a better one. And Jiyoung Lee will probably be taking on someone lesser. But I hope they don't cut Jiyoung. And I do wish Daniel the best for the rest of 2025. Following that, I am very pissed I missed on this. I can't even lie. This one pissed me off. Daniel Santos and Jiyoung Lee didn't piss me off. This one did. Marc-Andre Barriot, Bruno Silva. Dude, Bruno Silva sucks. That dude had so much potential. And just the Alex Pereira fight must have just knocked some things around his brain. And just that was that. After, since that fight, he has not been good. And Marc-Andre Barriot, how about getting a minute 27 second knockout? Amazing work for Mark. Amazing work for him. 11th career knockout. Back in the wing category. Feeling good for him. It was, yeah. And honestly, snapping a 3-fight losing streak, he'll remain in the UFC. You are going to be seeing Marc-Andre Barriot remain in the UFC. Now, as for Bruno Silva, this is going to be insane. Ends his tenure on a 5-fight losing streak, getting knocked out or finished in 2 of them, and this one worse than the rest. And by the way, ends his UFC tenure on a 1-7 record. That's just utterly insane. Bruno Silva, best of luck in some Brazilian fighting league. Okay, honestly, I don't know if the PFL is even going to sign this guy. Let's send him to the GFL. He can go fight in the Global Fighting League for all I care. But yeah, Bruno Silva, very brutal. Oddly, the first time he's been knocked out in his career. Somehow, the first time he's been knocked out in his career. I don't believe that, but that's just the facts that you need to deal with. So, great work for Marc-Andre Barriot, winning in front of Canada, his hometown of Canada. Home country, I should say. Hometown. It's basically his hometown. But, yeah, good stuff to Mark. As for what's next for him, I mean, there's just a plethora of unranked middleweights out there. They're everywhere. They're lurking. I was thinking if Kelvin Gastelum maybe lost to Joe Pyfer, that's coming up at UFC 316. I think that's a fight you could do. A little Kelvin Gastelum action. Who are some other middleweights he could maybe take on? Middleweight's such a weird division. Maybe the loser of that Jack Hermanson Gregory Rodriguez fight we were talking about. I don't know. But Mark, he's entertaining. He's fun. And yeah, I was just sad I didn't correctly predict him getting the win. But it is what is. Following that, we have another fight where I switch my picks at the end for no reason. I'm done switching picks. Okay, when we make our UFC Vegas 17, or 107, not 17, UFC Vegas 107 picks, later in the week, we are not switching anything on the podcast. We are going in with our picks in mind, and we're going to give them to you, because Navajo Sterling beating Ivan Erslein, Ivan Erslein definitely could have won this, and just zero fight IQ from Ivan Erslein. You know what? They're going to keep him in the UFC. They're going to keep him in the UFC for some freaking reason. I don't know who. They need to have Ivan Erslein's taking on Ibo Aslan. That's the fight I'm making next. But for this one, Navajo Sterling survives the undefeated curse of the year. 7-0 now. 2-0 in the UFC. Good stuff for him. And just domination. Just domination. Wins every single round except, I want to say, it was the second. It was either the second or the first they gave to Ivan Erslein. I can't remember, but Round one, Navajo outstrikes them 31-12. It was way more competitive than the numbers were given up, but when you look back at the numbers, you're like, holy cow, we almost outstruck them by 20. Round two, 19-11. You get two takedowns for Navajo. You know, Ivan was getting some control time. He might have won it there. And then round three, just Navajo took over 60 significant strikes to 13. Lands a nasty knockdown. I have no idea how Ivan even survived that. I thought he was knocked out cold and he just woke back up. And, you know, he's getting cracked in the face. Like, he's getting absolutely cracked. He's putting his hands there like, come on, let's go, riling up the crowd. Gets absolutely cracked again. Does it again. Cracked again. He keeps doing it. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, bring it on. And then gets dropped. And then Navajo ends the fight ground and pound. He was getting a little tired. Couldn't finish him off, but... Oh my gosh! It was a lock for Navajo. This is one of a few fights tonight, and it was such a lock that Navajo was gonna win. And I switched it for no freaking reason, other than to just be weird. And yeah, I'll have to eat that right there. But great win for Navajo Sterling, light heavyweight division. You have a stud on your hands. You have a stud. He's coming in now, 27. Nice win in the UFC. I don't know if he's gonna be getting a ranked opponent coming up. You know, we can always give him Alonzo Menafield, but there's other guys out there. There are other guys you can take on. You know, Asma Boskov, Bogdan Guskov, they're going to be fighting coming up, so maybe you have him face the winner of that. But Navo, you'll stick around. Ivan, I don't know. You can fight. They either could give Ivan someone fighting off of Davis Quintero series, or they could cut him, because what have I watched from him through his first two UFC fights? I have no idea. We'll have to see. But you know what? There's actually another option for who Navo could take on next, and it's the next winner of the next fight we're going to talk about, and it's Modestus Bukauskas, who wins a split decision, which no one actually thought he won. Apparently, I was unable to catch this fight, but for all I've heard, Modestus won. It was a close fight nonetheless, but everyone thought that Ion should have won. So, judges' scorecards, 30-27, 30-27, and 29-28. And mind you, one of those 30-27s was for Navajo Sterling, another 30-27 for Ion Cuilaba. The 29-28 from Sal D'Amato gives it to Modestus Bukauskas. And, you know, the verdict scorecard had it 2-1 on rounds, but total score going to Ion Cuilaba. For this one, Ion outstruck him in rounds one. Did he strike him every round? 17-12 in round one, 25-16, and then they were split on 16 in round three. Cuilaba goes 0-4 on takedowns, does get a little clinch control time, racks up 2 minutes, 21 seconds. But I was, from the clips I saw, I thought Modestus was doing good. But I guess not, you know. And even when they read the judges' scorecard, Ion's head was being hung low and Modestus was high. His fists were already high in the air. So, great win for Modestus Bukauskas. If you didn't know, now you know he's on a 3-fight freaking winning streak. And he just knocked out. Knocked off. Ion Cuilaba. So, I think him versus Navajo Sterling could be an option if some people don't think he's ready for someone legit. Alonzo Menafield is another name I'm always going to be throwing out there. Devin Clark, I don't think is in the UFC anymore. But hey, since his return to the UFC, 5-1, only losses to Vitor Petrino. Modestus Bukauskas, you're a stud. Big fan of Modestus Bukauskas. He'll be back later in the year against who? I don't know. As for Ion Cuilaba, back in the losing category, you know, he already took on, what's his face? Who did Ion Cuilaba already take on? He already took on Ivan Erslein. So I can't matchmake them, but, you know, someone who's actually coming to mind, Marcin Prochniak could be someone Ion Cuilaba takes on. I think that could be an option. Or maybe if we drop Ryan Spann down back to light heavyweight, Ryan Spann versus Ion Cuilaba. There's a fun fight, but yeah, Modestus gets the split decision. Apparently, he should have gotten it, but I predicted him, so I was happy. With that, we gave out a performance bonus in the next one as Jasmine Jaster Divicious runs through Jessica Andrade in 2 minutes and 40 seconds and gets her fourth career submission. Extends her win streak to 5. And I don't know why I picked... I switched to Jessica Andrade for no reason. Like, it's just like, it's so obvious Jasmine's going to win. And I switch it for no reason. Oh, I'm so pissed about that. But yes, Jasmine, excellent win for the favorite in front of her hometown of Canada. You love to see it. Mind you, literally was just hunting for the takedown. Got it. Andrade couldn't deal with the size and pressure. And Jasmine just vicious. Look at that. She's going from number 9 to number 7. I'd even bump her up to number 6 in the women's flyweight division. We're in for a good one. We are in for a good one with her. Jasmine, now ranked number 7. Who's next for her? I mean, there's Rose Namajunas. Who's Rose Namajunas? Actually, has a fight coming up, if I'm not mistaken. Is she taking on Random Maverick? I think she is. I don't know. But she's ranked number 7. She's got, you know, maybe Macy Barber, Erin Blanchfield. I don't know with that. I also think Alexa Grasso or Manny Fiora could be options for Jasmine. But she's getting a top 5 opponent next. So great work for Jasmine. As for Jessica Andrade, 2-fight losing streak now. I mean, literally, what do you do with her? Jessica Andrade will fight anyone in the rankings at strawweight or flyweight. I think she should stay at strawweight. She's ranked number 5, and she should take on the number 9 ranked Jillian Robertson. That's a fight that I'm going to matchmake right now. So I think you should do. If not, she can fight, I don't know, Luana Santos. I don't really care, but yeah. Good win for Jasmine. Runs through her. I was just watching. I'm like, why would I ever switch my pick? I knew I should have switched my pick, and I still did. Silly, silly me. After that, we went into our final prelim of the evening. What a satisfying knockout from Mike Mallett over Charles Radke. The disrespect. I don't think this Canada card made a lot of money because Bexot and Mike Mallett should have also gotten performance bonuses, and for some reason they didn't. They only gave one to Mark and to Jasmine. So Mike Mallett taking on Charles Radke, close competitive striking contest in round 1, and then round 2, they are trading punches back and forth. They're swinging, and Mike just clicks him with this beautiful hook. Down goes Radke. Follow-up punches, his lights are out, bam, Mike Mallett, almost at 100% finish rate. It is now going to be 11 of 12 wins by finish, and great work for the man, until two-fight winning streak now for Mike Mallett, and yeah, he's poised for a big welterweight matchup coming up in his next contest, but yeah, love to see this. You know, Charles Radke saying like, yeah, I'm not going to shake your hands because the Canadians booed the national anthem, and then he goes out, he gets knocked out, so give it us American's a bad rap. Let me just tell you about that. So good stuff for Mike Mallett. What's next for him? Welterweight division? I don't know. I kind of want to give him another run at the rankings. I kind of do. Him versus Carlos Prates could probably go hard. All right, but I doubt they're going to go that low. Loser of Michael Morales and Gilbert Burns, that's an option. You have Jeff Neal, Wonderboy Thompson, MVP. You have the loser or the winner of Vicente Luque and Kevin Holland coming up at UFC 316. There's a lot of options for Mike Mallett. Now, as for our good friend Charles Radke, this is now 1-2. You know, the knockout losses to Carlos Prates and Mike Mallett are kind of brutal. I think he's just the guy that's going to be unranked welterweights and a guy that's going to lose to anyone remotely close to or near the rankings. If Trevin Giles is still in the UFC, there's a fight you could do. Adam Fuji, Johan Lanez. I don't even know if those guys are still in the company, but there are a bunch of unranked welterweights who I'm pretty confident that he would beat. So interesting matchup there for whoever they do next, but I mean, a phenomenal knockout from Mike Mallett. It was Mike proper Mallett getting it done. Beautiful to see. With that, we dove into the pay-per-view main card, and we got it going with a little Benoit Saint-Denis, Kyle Prepolic, and it went exactly how everyone thought it would go. It was like Benoit Saint-Denis just destroying this guy. I mean, honestly, ridiculous performance from Benoit Saint-Denis. Now, couldn't get him out of there in round 1. I think that's props to Kyle Prepolic. I really think that's props to him. I mean, he didn't land a single strike in round 1. You know, 10 significant strikes to 0, 27 significant strikes to 0, 1 submission attempt, 4 minutes and 32 seconds of control time. Now, it did feel like Benoit should have gotten him out of there in round 1. You know, round 2 comes around, similar thing, shoots the takedown. There's a bit more striking on the feet, 44 significant strikes to 12. Benoit Saint-Denis eventually gets to arm triangle from side control, and yeah, that was that. Benoit Saint-Denis getting his 10th career submission. By the way, still have 100% finish rate. And his first win since, can you believe it or not, November 2023. Yeah, can you believe that? He went 0-2 in 2024. So good stuff for Benoit. He was supposed to take on Joel Alvarez. Apparently, Joel can't make lightweight anymore, which means they'll probably boot Joel from the rankings at 15 and put Benoit back in at 15. Or Benoit will just not be ranked. But he's ranked 13. My goodness, I was looking at the rankings completely wrong. Benoit Saint-Denis ranked number 13. What should be next for him? Well, how about Grant Dawson? How about Rafael Fiziev? How about maybe even Benil Dariush or even Matheus Gamrot? There's a lot of fun fights you can make with Benoit Saint-Denis, but yeah, we knew he was better than Kyle, and he got it done. Now, as for Kyle Prepolic, what do we do with him? I feel like they usually reward guys who step in on short notice, so Kyle is probably going to get one more fight at lightweight. Mind you, he is 35. This does snap his little 3-fight winning streak. So who's a little lightweight aging veteran that we could have him take on? It's tough to say. It really is tough to say. I mean, none really come to mind in terms of the lightweight division, but there's always Jim Miller. Kyle Propelic, Jim Miller. Let's just give him that. Because you know what? It could be a big, good pick-me-up fight for Jim Miller, and maybe it could give Kyle an opportunity to showcase, hey, I'm as legit as I tell people I am. So, good stuff there. Benoit will be back later in the year. Well, Kyle? I don't know, but I do like that Kyle-Jim Miller matchmaking. I really do like that. Big BSD fan, so happy that Benoit got it done. God of War, getting it done. Love to see it. Next up, our second-to-last women's flyweight matchup of the evening. And ladies and gentlemen, we have a new number one contender and a new lady next in line for a championship fight. As number five-ranked Natalia Silva shuts the lights out on Alexa Grasso, 30-27s across the board. Alexa Grasso looking a complete different version of how she did when she was a champion, you know. I missed on Jasmine versus Jessica Andrade. So happy I didn't miss on Natalia Silva versus Alexa Grasso. And at the end of the day, 65 submission strikes of 45, outstruck her by 4 in round 1, 2 in round 2, and a whopping 13 in round 3. Double her submission strikes in round 3. Natalia Silva, just beautiful. Just honestly a beautiful performance from Natalia Silva. And mind you, it's a 13-fight winning streak now for Natalia Silva. And wild. Wow, Natalia Silva, 13-fight winning streak. She's, I want to say, 7-0 in the UFC, and she's going to be now the new number one ranked woman come the rankings update on Tuesday, which I'm very excited to see. And we talk about that later in the week. So, I mean, just throughout this one, really using the leg kicks in this one, hitting to the body, and there's a couple points where these two ladies were just swinging at each other, and Grasso did crack Silva a couple times, but it just never fazed her. And mind you, where Grasso would get clipped, you could kind of tell that, hey, this is hurting her, this isn't good, and lo and behold, it did hurt, and Natalia Silva gets it done. For Alexa Grasso, you know, this is weird to think. She actually hasn't won a fight since she beat Valentina Shevchenko. If no one can really remember, she actually had a draw against her, then lost to Valentina, and is now lost here. So it has been a long time, actually 2 years, since Alexa Grasso has officially won a UFC fight, which is weird to think. And for Natalia Silva, it has been years since she lost an MMA fight. So great work to both these ladies. That's Natalia Silva versus Valentina Shevchenko will be next, unless they elect to maybe do Zhang Weili versus Valentina, a little double woman's title fight. You could do it somewhere in Europe later in the year. The only reason I say that is because there is not a single woman at strawweight who Zhang can take on. There's obviously Virna Jandidoba, but that excites no one. So if I'm being honest, I would love to see Zhang Weili versus Valentina. But if they don't want to do that, the number one ranked woman, Natalia Silva, will be a good opponent for Valentina Shevchenko. And I honestly think Natalia Silva will beat Valentina Shevchenko. That's my early prediction. Maybe Natalia Silva ends the year as champion and shocks all of us. I would love to see that. For Alexa Grasso, she's probably going to get bumped down to number two in the rankings, if I'm being honest. And as for what's next, the Macy Barber rematch, Jasmine Jasu DeVicious, as we just mentioned, those are the two names that come to mind. You know, they could always do Erin Blanchfield, Amanda Fiorot maybe, but I do think she's going to have to take on someone of Jasmine or Macy Barber's caliber as we look to see who will be behind Natalia Silva. Now, you know, I love in a lot of these divisions, we're getting multiple number one contender matchups. Obviously, Erin Blanchfield and Macy Barber will fight at the end of the month, and whoever wins that will probably be second in line for the next woman's title shot. But this wasn't like too entertaining, but nonetheless it was still, you know, it wasn't a bad matchup. It did what it needed to. It's just at times we run to decisions on decisions and it kind of gets old. And you know, that sort of happened here. You know, Amin Zahabi, Jose Aldo, it was just another decision, but it was still entertaining. It was very entertaining, and Amin Zahabi gets it done by unanimous decision. You get 29-28 across the board, and some people are saying Jose Aldo should have won, but this was the best for business decision. Amin Zahabi, I arguably thought, won this contest, and it was just competitive. Just competitive, back and forth. 68 submission strikes to 99. Jose Aldo getting outstruck. Did land a knockdown in round 3. 109 total strikes to 71 for Amin Zahabi, and you even had Jose Aldo shooting a takedown. For goodness sakes, it failed, by the way. The takedown failed. Amin Zahabi wound up on top and busted Jose open, which ultimately led to him winning round 3. But round 1, Jose took 23-21, 7 striking. It gets the edge there. round two, 26-25. Amin gets the edge on Jose Aldo. And then we open the round, and Jose Aldo is just killing Amin Zahabi with knees. I mean, Amin is running across the cage to get away from him. He's thrown back occasionally. I thought he was knocked out cold. And a lot of people were saying that Dan Margliotta should stop the contest. But he didn't need to stop the contest because Amin was able to recover. And not only did he recover, he was able to reverse it and win the round with all of his ground and pounds. So props to Amin Zahabi. Outstrikes him 52-20 in round number three. When you can land a knockdown in a round and then proceed to lose the round, that's a sign to hang it up. And then, you know what? This is the second retirement of the 38-year-old Jose Aldo. He should have never retired after losing to Merab. That was just, he did a, you know, he either should have stayed retired or just not retired yet. But Jose Aldo returns to the UFC, goes 1-2, and, you know, props to him because he's helped boost Mauro Bautista and Amin Zahabi into the top 10. So Jose was ranked 11. He will be removed from the rankings. Amin Zahabi will move up to number 11 in the rankings. And I'll be excited to see what they do with him next. You know, there's a couple names. There's obviously maybe the winner of Marlon Vera and Mario Bautista. Davison Figueiredo is a name I was seeing thrown around. That's a really fun matchup you could do. You could even have him fight Rob Font. But Amin Zahabi, props to him, 37 years old, getting into his prime. And this is now six straight wins, and you beat Jose Aldo. Yeah, people got to take Ariel Helwani look-alike a bit more serious after this one. Jose, wish you nothing but the best in retirement, man. 38 years old, one of the greatest fighters of all time. I will send you off with your flowers. Because honestly, it wasn't too bad of a performance to go out on. I mean, he had some fun moments in this, throwing some hard strikes, but it's just how it goes. After that, we get into our co-main event, Valentin Shevchenko, Manon Fiorot. And everything that was expected of this, quite honestly, yeah, but everyone said, yeah, this is probably going to be a 48-47 close matchup where both these women show the similar skill sets. And that's exactly what this was, and Valentina Shevchenko wins the unanimous decision, solidifies herself as the still women's pound-for-pound top fighter, women's flyweight champion, one of, if not, the greatest women's fighters of all time. I think Nunes is going to probably remain at one, but Valentina is kind of locking up two at the moment. Totals from the fight, one knockdown for Valentina Shevchenko in round number, I'm trying to think what round it was, round number four, 72 submission strikes to 71 in favor of Valentina, 173 total strikes, 150 in favor of Valentina, 2 of 9 on takedowns for a minute 52 of control time for Valentina, 1 of 12 for Manon Fiorot, 7 minutes of control time, Valentina gets the better of her. It was pretty much Valentina won round one, Vannon won round two, then it was pretty much a toss-up in round three, then Valentina won round four, then round five was a toss-up, and it was like, you know what, Valentina should probably remain as champion. But yeah, if I'm being honest, if I went through it, I looked at the stats alone, I'd probably given Manon Fiorot round two and five, maybe. You could make a case for maybe three, but I doubt it. Look, Valentina did what she had to do, gets the win now, and this is now two straight wins for her. And that whole Alexa Grasso saga, it's crazy that Valentina has come out as the better looking woman out of all of that. Now for Manon Fiorot, this does kind of suck. 12-fight win streak snapped, suffering your first professional defeat since you began your MMA career. It's pretty wild, so tough for her. Wasn't a fight of the night. And honestly, Valentina Shevchenko title performances have kind of grown old. So I'm honestly, getting a little sick of them. But good stuff for her. She'll take on either Natalia Silva or Zhang Weili. We'll have to see. But I'm probably not picking her to win. I'm going to be honest. I would pick Zhang Weili and Natalia Silva over Valentina Shevchenko. She's 37. The age showed here. And that's just how it is. And for Manon Fiorot, you know, she's 35. She's no spring chicken either. She's in a similar spot as Alexa Grasso. She's going to take on your Jasmine Jester Deficiences, your Tracy Cortez's, your winner or loser of Aaron Blanchfield, Macy Barber. She's just going to take on someone outside of the top three, top five. So best of luck to both these women after this. But this was nothing shocking. In the slice. Everything I expected to happen did happen. And then I missed the main event. You know, one too many Captain Cokes and Starboard shots. But from all I've heard is that Bilal Muhammad versus Jack Talamalena is a lot of people's front runner for fight of the year. But hey, what can we say? Jack Talamalena beats Bilal Muhammad 48-47, 48-47, and 49-46. We have a new men's welterweight champion. Jack Talamalena will go from 5 in the rankings to number 1. And not even just number 1, the world champion. That's right. He's now now a world champion. And when we talk about the men's pound-for-pound rankings, Bilal was 7. You got to get Jack Dalbeleta now with the men's pound-for-pound rankings. Good job for Jack. Excellent work. 18 straight wins now. 18 straight wins, and he's your new men's welterweight champion. You know, this division has had a lot of few champions over the last few years, and he gets it done in this one. 178 significant strikes to 132 in favor of JDM. 200 total strikes to 155. Bilal, 3 of 9 on takedowns for 3 minutes of control time. JDM goes 0-4-3, but did what he had to do to get it done. And from everything I've heard from this one, this was pretty much, you know, Bilal didn't really have a grappling-heavy attack plan. Jack showed great takedown defense on the feet. It was just so clear for Jack. And when I look at the strike totals, I mean, round 5 was the best round for JDM. Outstruck him 53-27, despite Bilal landing 2 takedowns to get a minute and a half control time. He had Bilal busted open by the end of it. Bilal's orbital bone is broken. His nose is busted up. His lip is cut. His cheek is cut. Bilal was messed up by the boxing of JDM. Bilal maybe could have won, you know, rounds 3 and 4. Rounds 1 and 2 are also kind of close, but by the sound of it, Jack Dalmalena did what he had to do, got it done, and he is your new men's welterweight champion. How exciting! How excited for JDM. I did miss on my prediction here, so I'm only missing one. Main card fight is not, it's not making me mad at all, but I will say it was about time. The first time I actually picked Bilal, he loses, which I feel bad for Bilal because everyone hated on him. He's actually a really great guy, but entertainment wise, we have a new good champion here in Jack Della Maddalena. Now, unfortunately, one would think, oh, he's going to take on Sean Brady, Shavkat Rakhmonov, you know, Ian Garry, but no. He is going to have a date with the lightweight champion Islam Makhachev later in the year. That's right. Islam Makhachev is all but confirmed to be moving up in weight to welterweight, vacating his lightweight championship since the UFC is no longer having 2-division champions and trying to become a 2-division champion. Honestly, I'm going to be honest. Jack would probably mess up Islam in the striking, but in terms of the grappling, I think it might be over for Jack. I think Islam will get the better of him there. So that'll be very interesting. Now, as for the other aspect of that, Islam Makhachev will be vacating, which means you're going to get Charles Oliveira versus Iatopira for the vacant lightweight championship. We have got some good fights going out of this. I can't even lie. JDM Makhachev, Topura, and Oliveira. Yeah, sign me up. And I want to see any of those guys lose. All 4 of them are such beauties. But Jack Dalmalena, look at that. Jack Dalmalena did what Leon Edwards and Colby Covington couldn't do. They beat Bilal Muhammad. Isn't that insane to think? I mean, Sean Brady, even the number one contender, Bilal finished, for goodness sake. So, excellent work to Jack Dalmalena. I'll be excited to see him later in the action in the year. Now, as for what's next for Bilal, he'll move to the number one spot in the rankings, presumably, unless they just kick him out of the rankings. I just don't think they rock with Bilal that much, but he's 36. Look, there's a couple options, I think, on the table. First off, number 2 ranked Shavkat Rakhmonov. I think there's a fight you could do there. I think, I don't know, maybe the winner of Kamaru Usman and Joaquin Buckley, maybe Ian Garry. I don't really know with Bilal. I don't really know. I don't think there's any matchups that could really surprise me. They might do, they could do Carlos Prates versus Bilal Muhammad for all I care. But you know what, Bilal, you won the welterweight championship. You won it, and you stood, and you boxed with one of the greatest boxers on the roster. And honestly, you know what, Bilal is my respect now. I am not bored to watch a Bilal Muhammad fight after hearing what I heard. And I watched a couple bits of round number 5, and it looked pretty entertaining. But yeah, look at that. New champion. This is our 311, 312, 313, 314. This is our third new champion of the year, I think it is. We've had Volkanovski regaining. We've had Magomed Ankalaev winning. We've now had Jack Dalmalena winning. Ooh, very interesting. Very interesting indeed. Good stuff. Good stuff all around. And yeah, UFC 315, I'd say, is a success. No real duds on the card. A lot of entertainment all around. And on the year now, 129-66. We are almost at plus 70 on predictions. And we're having our best predictions here of the year. And I kind of butchered it here, man. I'm going to be honest. I should never have switched Navajo and Jessica. okay? If I was actually picking who I was rooting for, I should have picked JDM. The Marc-Andre Barrault and Bruno Silva was a toss-up. That one kind of makes me somewhat mad. And then Daniel Santos, Jiang Li, I genuinely just didn't know Daniel Santos was like that. I thought Jiang Li was like that, so I'm not too bad about that miss. But we leave UFC 315 in the past, and where do we go? Back to the Apex. But not too bad of a card. Gilbert Burns, Michael Morales. Very sad that Gilbert Burns is back again in boosting up a new contender, but it's how it goes. Rodolfo Bellotto and Paul Craig in a little light heavyweight action. Sody Youssef is finally back as he takes on Ultimate Fighter winner Myron Santos. Nosutin Ruzaboyev is back in action. Melkozel Costa back for his third fight of the freaking year. Tiago Moises back in action. Luiana Santos, Denise Gomez, Hyung Sung Park, Luiana Pinero. A lot of fun fights. Not too bad. Not too bad of a card. If I'm going to be honest, for Apex cards, this one isn't too bad. After that, we know we have another Apex card later in the month, so May doesn't really have any more crowds, but then June comes around, UFC 316 in Newark, New Jersey, Rob Docelli, Sean O'Malley, then we go to UFC Atlanta, Usman and Buckley, then UFC Baku, or UFC Azerbaijan, as I'm going to call it, Jamal Hill and Khalil Roundtree Jr., and we end out with the month with International Fight Week, UFC 317, for the kind of mid-May we're going to be getting. June rewards us very handsomely, but ladies and gentlemen, I will leave you all with that. We may have some bonus episodes coming out in the next 2 weeks or so, but all I know is 11 days into May, I'm recording this May 11th, and this month I can already tell is like a turning point in the chapter of my life. When we write our autobiography one day, or maybe I make like my great nephew write my biography because I don't want to type it all out, I can't lie, this is going to be a turning point in my life. A lot of things are happening, a lot of things are changing, and I'm just blessed to have all of you, my lovely audience, always listening every single week. So guys, go out there, make this the best week of your lives, make this the best month of your lives, and as much as I said, you know, as much as people say college is the best time of your life, you're going to miss it so much, don't say it's the best time of your life. You know, miss it, but remember, the future will always bring you better days. You will always have an amazing day in the future. So don't dwell on all the great past times we had. Oh, you know, I wish we could go back in time. No, you build the future you want. You build a successful life. That's what we're doing here. And as always, guys, guess where I'll catch you? Right back here on the Surprise Jab Podcast.